Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I am John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 2nd, 2020. South Sudanese struggle to survive as the government imposes restrictions.
For us to survive and the rest of South Sudanese here, they should have allowed some kind of, they should have not forbid some such small business.
And rebels of the National Salvation Front abduct civilians in central Equatorial State.
Army men, well armed, came to Mukaya. In total, there were about 107. According to the report concerned, I understand it was taken by NAS. As I'm somebody concerned, I'm really not happy at all.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Juba Town say government directives to combat the spread of coronavirus has impacted their livelihoods. Most families who depend on small-scale businesses to feed their families say the government-imposed restrictions is hurting them. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Last weekend, the government banned the use of motorbike taxis, known as Boda Boda, restricted public transport, and ordered all bars and shops selling non-food items to close. Officials say the measures will help reduce crowds and thereby stop the spread of coronavirus, even though there are no confirmed cases in South Sudan. The once bustling Konyokonyo market has gone silent. Most shops are shuttered with heavy padlocks on their doors. Some police are checking the market to make sure the shops are closed. Some people in Juba who earn a living selling clothing, electronics and other items say with no income they are running out of money to take care of their families. Small business owners say the shutdown is like a death sentence. Konyokonyo vendor Duang Michael Matuch, who sells spoon accessories, is one of them.
This shutdown of the market has affected me seriously, because throughout South Sudan, 90% of South Sudanese are depending on daily work, like what we do here.
Matuch says he cannot understand why the government is enforcing the coronavirus directives without contemplating the impact on low-income families.
For us to survive and the rest of South Sudanese here, they should have allowed some kind of, they should have not forbid some such small business. If my government failed to provide, like, to the rest of the countries, you are provided, the household is provided with all food items, But here, for my case, it's not happening. So for that matter, I can die.
Speaking in Arabic, Cholmam, who normally refers mobile phones in Konyokonyo market, says his wife, 1-year-old son, and other relatives rely on him to be able to eat every day.
Now things are hard. There is no work as the market is closed. Even to get what to eat is difficult. Before, I was able to get good money for 2 days, but now it is all gone.
Mom says he used to earn 3,000 South Sudanese pounds each day from his spoon repair shop business. Now he has no income. The government's directives extend through April 30th. Mom says staying at home for that amount of time will be like jumping out of a frying pan into the fire. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Most countries in East Africa have only a handful of corona cases so far, but health officials in Ethiopia, Africa's second most populous country, are preparing for the worst in case the pandemic gains a larger foothold. Figures seen by VOA show millions of Ethiopians to be at risk of contracting the disease, while thousands could need intensive care inside a month. Simon Max reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
The Ethiopian Health Ministry has modelled a worst-case scenario for the country due to what officials fear could lead to a super-spreading event that results in the health system being overwhelmed in a few weeks. Government data produced this week by Ethiopia's Health Ministry and obtained by VOA outlines a worst-case scenario for Africa's second most populous country, predicting that almost 28 million people in the country are at risk of contracting the virus. The government is planning for as many as 9,700 people to need intensive care in the next 4 weeks. The data also state that as many as 30,000 serious coronavirus cases could arise even if social distancing measures are implemented. Leah Tedessa, Ethiopia's health minister, authenticated the document seen by VOA, but underlined that the government was in the process of updating its numbers. She told VOA via a messaging app that there is a major shortage of intensive care units in Ethiopia.
Based on the evidence so far globally, patients with COVID-19, at least around 5% of them would require ICU support and ventilators. And considering what we have in the current status of the country, even in the cities, we do have a huge gap in terms of numbers of ICU beds and ventilators.
Tedessa said that Ethiopia was in the process of procuring more intensive care units and ventilators, as well as training people in how to use them.
We are hoping to add close to 500 ventilators for the whole country. Currently, as a country, we have around 435 ventilators, mostly in public, some in private. We are preparing for worst-case scenarios. Of course, the exact estimations and modeling exercise is not finalized, but the work is ongoing.
Tedessa would not comment on government projections that up to 1,242 people could potentially die in Ethiopia inside 4 weeks, but noted that the government was working in close cooperation with experts from the World Health Organization, Ohio State University, and consulting firm McKinsey to carry out modelling exercises and arrive at reliable figures. The document seen by VOA also notes that other health emergencies in the country could flare up as the health system shifts to responding to COVID-19. As of Wednesday, these dire predictions remain hypothetical. Ethiopia has only 29 confirmed cases of coronavirus and no deaths. Case numbers remain low in all of Ethiopia's neighbours as well. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Residents of the Sudanese capital Khartoum have gone into panic buying as the government imposed curfew in cities across Sudan. Some residents say they are expecting a total lockdown of the capital Khartoum as the COVID-19 pandemic spreads globally. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Speaking in Arabic, 42-year-old Najat Hassan Abdullah, a resident of Khartoum's Kalakla neighborhood, says she noticed price hikes when she went food shopping this morning.
Things are now very expensive, and a poor person cannot afford the price. We are only surviving by the grace of God.
Hassan says she decided to go shopping for her family of seven today because she believes the government might undertake further protective measures to combat the spread of coronavirus in the coming days. Speaking in Arabic, Hassan says she fears if Sudanese don't die of COVID-19, they may die of hunger because they will not be able to afford the high food prices.
I came here to purchase vegetables such as potatoes, onion, tomatoes, in addition to bread. We do queue for more than 2 hours on a daily basis just as to get bread. And now I came to the market and found all the commodities are very expensive. And on the other side, we are faced with this pandemic of corona. And even it is very difficult to get masks in the market.
63-year-old Abdulillah Sharif Ibrahim, a resident of the Kalakla Guba neighborhood, says for the past week, prices of basic food items have jumped significantly. Speaking in Arabic, Sharif says 1 kilogram of sugar, which used to cost 70 Sudanese pounds a week ago, now costs 120 pounds, and a tray of eggs that used to cost 200 Sudanese pounds is now 250 Sudanese pounds.
Prices are so high and things that used to be sold at 40 pounds has jumped to 120 pounds. The government is supposed to control the prices so that we are able to survive. Traders should not take the advantage of the curfew to raise prices in the market.
23-year-old Gisma Hussein Adam is widowed with two kids. Speaking in Arabic, Hassan says she worries about catching the coronavirus, not paying the higher prices.
My only fear is about my kids. I do not want any one of them to get infected with this corona. I am really taking care of them, wash their hands with soap, and prepare clean and well-cooked food for them. I am very strict on them to remain inside and not to go anywhere.
Hussein urges other Khartoum residents to protect their families against catching the virus. Radi Abubakar Ahmed Ali is a retail trader who sells vegetables and other food items at Lafa Market. Speaking in Arabic, Abubakar says traders have increased commodity prices because they have incurred losses since the government imposed curfew a week ago to control the spread of COVID-19. Abubakar says unless traders increase commodity prices, they won't be able to buy stock from wholesalers who have already increased prices.
We used to go the wholesale market at around 1 a.m. and the market used to be accessible. But now we go there at 6 a.m. By the time we come back, customers have gone, and by 6 p.m. all the shops are closed. The curfew made it difficult for us to move at night, and it has affected our business for nearly 90%.
A bag of sugar, which cost 2,000 Sudanese pounds a few days ago, has jumped into 3,350 Sudanese pounds. A bag of onions, which used to cost 800 Sudanese pounds, is now going for 1,200 pounds. And a jerry can of cooking oil, which used to sell for 1,900 pounds, now costs 2,280 pounds, according to Abubakar. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. This program is recorded via remote. Coming up, rebels of the National Salvation Front abduct civilians in Central Equatoria State. Find out why after this break.
Think. People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing.
First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas. Maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music, the music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
A Juba-based analyst warns South Sudan's economy will be affected negatively if it takes several months for countries to contain the coronavirus pandemic, noting South Sudan relies heavily on imports from countries that have imposed lockdowns. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
Ahmed Morgan, an economic lecturer at the University of Juba, says even though South Sudan has no confirmed case of COVID-19 to date, the pandemic will have short and long-term impacts on the country's economy. Morgan says lockdowns, especially in neighboring countries like Uganda, will lead to a scaling down of industrial and agricultural production, which will directly impact the supply of commodities to South Sudan.
Now, this lockdown affects supplies of commodities coming into South Sudan, as one. Two, South Sudan is, in terms of income, it is a low-income country, as we know, you see, regardless of the oil that it produces. And it is a mono-commodity economy. In other words, it depends only on one commodity. Hence, income-wise, South Sudan is also going to be affected, because I know it will not have enough income to make policies, you know, that will help individuals in the country.
Morgan says those countries might still supply South Sudan with oil stocks for a while, but once they run out of those commodities, there will be nothing left to sell to South Sudan. And some residents have already begun panic buying.
I know there are some panic people who have already gone to the market and have stocked themselves with the necessary items for almost, that can take them for 2 months or 3 months, you see. Now, those who are weaker, who depends on from hands to mouth, will not be able to stock anything. They have actually no capacity to stock anything. They depend on their daily activities. And as countries lock down, they will not have no time to, I mean, they will have no jobs. And once they have no jobs, they have no income. And this will be the people who will be affected immediately.
Morgan says governments of countries with large numbers of confirmed coronavirus cases will likely put the needs of their citizens first and restrict export of essential commodities like food and medicine. Unlike in developed countries, Morgan says South Sudan does not have the capacity or resources to provide for its citizens' basic needs. Morgan says the unity government should stock enough food, medicine, and fuel to avoid shortages that may arise from lockdowns in neighboring countries.
We know the oil revenue will not be able to sustain. And as we know in the international market, the price of oil is going down. And as many countries outside, they are locking down. Our oil demand will also not be there. No one is going to buy the oil. So they have to secure enough funding that should be available for the people of South Sudan. Two, there should be stocking of essential commodities by the government, okay, and other aid agencies which are there to help when this thing is, persist.
Morgan says if lockdowns continue in neighboring countries for the next 2 months or more, most South Sudanese will not be able to cope with expected shortages in food and other basic supplies. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Local officials in Epayam of Lanya County in Central Equatoria State accuses National Salvation Front rebels of recently abducting more than 100 civilians. The authorities say the NAS rebels plan to forcefully recruit the civilians, who are mostly young men, into their ranks. A spokesman of the National Salvation Front denies the accusation. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei Town.
Mokaya Payama Administrator Franco Lumori says abductees were rounded up in two different incidences in the villages of Sokar, Demoan, and Lorega.
Army men, well armed, came to Mukaya. In total, there were about 107. According to the report concern, I understand it was taken by NAS. As I'm somebody concerned, I'm really not happy at all. My special message to the NAS group is Special Thomas Cirillo. He should communicate with his grand commanders, at least not to do such things, because we are now at peace.
Lumori is calling on national authorities to investigate the circumstances behind the abductions. Robert Isaiah Lomude, a former lawmaker who represented Mokaya Payam in the defunct Yei River State Transitional Legislative Assembly, is calling for the unconditional release of all the civilians.
Those are young men taken. The issue now, which is puzzling the people, they didn't know exactly where are they taken. Is it for training, recruits, or is it a mobilization for construction of houses, or what is it exactly? I'm appealing to those who have taken them to have mercy on the people and allow them to come back.
Lomude is appealing to the International Committee of the Red Cross to coordinate the safe release of the abductees. Speaking in his Podulu dialect, a man who says he escaped from the abductors told South Sudan in Focus on condition of anonymity for safety reasons that he escaped from his captors came at night hours when the guards were not looking.
The bad thing was that people were arrested under gunpoint, and that seems to be a military politics where many of us divided into three different groups, and once you need to drink some water and urinate, we were guarded under others.
Soba Samuel Manas, a spokesman for the National Salvation Front, denies his group was behind the incident, suggesting instead that government forces carried out the abductions.
What do we do with these civilians? And I think the government is doing this because there is no administration in those areas to hold them accountable.
SSPDF spokesman Major General Lu Ruai Quang says there's little doubt the NAS is responsible for abducting civilians in the Ye area, where he says the rebel group has been active in the past.
Them abducting civilians, they deny only for them to release them after a few days, because we have examples, civilians getting abducted, humanitarian aid workers getting abducted, for the first time for us to say no and only to say yes. There would be no reason for us to abduct civilians.
Amule Felix, the administrator for the now defunct Ye River State, says the attack violates the Rome Declaration on Cessation of Hostilities Agreement signed between the government and holdout rebel groups like NAS.
We respect the order and the ceasefire. We condemn strongly such kind of acts, and they should not really continue, because it will disrupt the peace that people are yearning and are trying to enjoy as ushering in the 10 states.
Though parties to the revitalized peace deal have named ministers and other top officials in the unity government, civilians in parts of central Equatorial State continue to face human rights abuses from both armed opposition and government forces. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Ye Town, central Equatorial State.
Malawian officials are taking steps to stop a new wave of mob attacks on people accused of being vampires. Officials say 5 people were killed in attacks in 3 separate areas last month. Similar attacks killed 9 people in 2017. Government is reminding the public that vampires do not exist, and police are arresting those accused of spreading false information. Lameck Masina reports from Blantyre.
Local media reported Tuesday that police in the northern district of Nkatabe used tear gas to disperse a mob which attacked workers from the National Statistical Office as they were conducting a survey in the area. Police say the mob accused the researchers of being vampires, as their work involved the collection of blood samples of participants. Rumors of vampires sucking people's blood started in early February and have spread to 6 districts in central and northern Malawi. Some residents believe vampires use modern technology to immobilize victims late at night with a chemical and then drain their blood before disappearing. This has prompted some residents, like Agnes Zimba, to sleep in groups outside their houses for safety. Zimba spoke to VOA by phone.
Moyo wathu wasikundisiku ukukhala osokonekera chifukwa tikumakhala mwamantha.
She says we fear we can have our blood sucked if we sleep alone in our houses. We are even failing to go to our gardens for fear of being attacked by vampires there. Local authorities believe the rumors originated from neighboring Zambia. In some areas, the rumor has led to a rise in vigilante groups mounting ad hoc roadblocks and searching vehicles. On Monday last week, 3 medical workers were attacked in the central district of Nchinji for carrying medical equipment that could be used to take blood samples. Last Saturday, 2 people, including an aide to a traditional leader, were killed in the Kasungu district for allegedly hiding accused vampires. Mobs killed 3 others last month in the attacks in Central Dowa District and in Zimba District in the north. James Kadadzela is a Malawi police spokesperson. He told a VOA via WhatsApp call that rumors of vampires are a hoax. He also said police are cracking down on those involved in the vigilante attacks.
As I'm talking to you, 37 suspects have already been arrested and they will answer for murder, others for assaults, others for malicious damage.
Rumors about vampires also erupted in 2017 in southern Malawi, triggering mob attacks that caused the deaths of 9 people. Malawian President Peter Mutharika helped to stop those attacks after visiting the affected areas and ordering police to arrest anyone spreading rumors. Mark Bottoman is a government spokesperson. He told VOA in a telephone interview the government has no plans to send out the president this time around.
He doesn't necessarily have to take the head of state to visit the areas for people to know that this is not right. So we do not have such programs at the moment. As you know, that the head of state is also restricting himself from moving around because of the situation which we have now, the coronavirus.
Bordoman said the government will instead try to persuade people not to believe in false information. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Some Juba residents say government directives aimed at fighting the spread of coronavirus has hurt their ability to make money. The government banned the use of the motorbike taxis called Boda Bodas, restricted public transport, and ordered all bars and shops selling non-food items to close. Officials say the measures will reduce crowds, which will help prevent the spread of the virus. The once bustling Konya Konya market has gone silent. Most shops there are closed. Some small business owners who earn a living selling clothes or electronics, whose shops worship, down, say they are running out of money. An economist in Juba warns that South Sudan's economy will deteriorate if it takes a long time for countries to contain the pandemic, noting that South Sudan relies heavily on imports from other countries where lockdowns are in place. Ahmed Morgan, an economic lecturer at the University of Juba, says while South Sudan has no confirmed cases of COVID-19, other countries' outbreaks will have short and long-term impacts on the country's economy. And finally, some Sudanese in Khartoum are panic buying as coronavirus cases increase in that country and others around the world. Some residents say commodity prices have skyrocketed in recent days. Khartoum resident Najat Hassan Abdallah says he noticed big price hikes while she went shopping this morning. Hassan says she fears if Sudanese don't die of COVID-19, they may die of hunger because they will not be able to afford the new high prices. And that's a look at some of today's headlines. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Mama Ama by Colonel Mido. Listening to Colonel Mido with the song Mama Ama. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening. And remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm
mogitangaze chikune watea.